Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
A laptop mic.
Okay, I'll press this little record button. Online.
Are you sure?
Are you sure? Oh, no, I want to see this for myself. You didn't give us any warning. I could have said anything.
Oh, six watching.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah, go for it. Do it. I'm on it. Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we're back in the rugby dungeon after the European finals and 160 minutes of the most elite domestic rugby in the Northern Hemisphere to talk about, and that's exactly what we're going to do among all the other stories going on in the rugby world. Thank you for listening. Thank you also for watching. We're currently streaming on YouTube, and clearly some people have started to get the hang of the fact that around about 9 p.m. on a Sunday evening,
Something will happen.
So fair play. Leave your comments there, and we can filter those into the show. That's JB.
Hello, Tim.
Going very neon tonight.
Yeah. So the reason I've got this is because I used to have an orange one, which I wore to death, literally, until it came apart. And then my mum, because I told her that I threw my orange one away, went out and bought me this neon green one. So I've got, I have to wear it, really.
It's a beautiful colour.
It is beautiful. It brings up my trainers.
Do we have any sad music? I feel like we need it right now because Phil no longer resembles Hamish Watson.
No.
At least on top of his head. He's
much
had
better,
his haircut.
No. Much, much better.
It is much better, yeah.
It is
much better.
Thank you. I'm glad you say that. It was sad to see it go. Yeah. I was looking back at some pictures of my on my phone.
With sad music?
With some sad music and a tear in my eye. And the best time, the saddest time, was actually not getting rid of the mullet, but getting rid of the moustache that I had for about two weeks.
Yeah.
That combo, which I don't think we ever did a YouTube live pod with the moustache and the mullet combo. To get rid of both of them is disappointing.
It is. But you look great.
Thank you.
Oh, and by the way, happy birthday.
Thank you, GB. Thank you.
That's why there's Mississippi mud pie.
That's why. I don't just dish out Mississippi mud pie for no reason.
Well,
Phil came with Mississippi mud pie, which is wonderful, I have to say. It's even more wonderful than your wonderful Stollen.
Well, we know what we drink on our birthday, don't we, Phil? Delicious strong zero right here for you. Should you want it? Do you want one now?
I've got to drive home later. Maybe if we can get a chance sometime soon, though.
Yes.
Maybe crack one. Because I bought a similar store for myself. I got you six cans, and I've got a similar number at home as well.
This is like when Nazi war criminals used to keep cyanide underneath their false teeth, isn't it? Very similar principle.
Just in case.
Just in case.
It all gets too much for me.
Wow.
I do like that. This is typical of rugby clubs, and you can play rugby with people for years and years and years, or in this case, do a podcast with someone for years and years and years and have no idea what their birthday is. I played rugby for years with people who don't really know what they did for a job or anything like that, or who their missus was or anything. Yeah.
So interestingly, I thought, it was sort of common knowledge in Colne Bay Rugby Club where I used to play, that everyone's birthday fell between somewhere mid-May, everybody, to
end of August.
Everyone's Facebook, because it was like top secret. If your birthday was known to the lads in the rugby club, my word, were you in for a hard bus ride.
Yes.
Death pint.
Yeah, death pints. It was awful, actually.
So let me just do a couple of bits of admin before we get into the meat and two veg of the podcast. If you want to see just how bright and neon JB's top is, and some of the other jerseys that are around in the rugby dungeon,
have you sent the jerseys to the patrons yet?
Not the I'll take the, what's it called, Aaron Smith one, not Aaron Smith,
Aaron.
The TJ Perenara one.
Okay, cool.
I'll take the PJ.
Hurricanes, yes.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yes, but we will have another shirt giveaway coming up soon. And we also, I'm firing it back at you, have you put information about North Dorset Sevens up?
No, and I'll tell you why, because we've got a team manager, so I'm just organising the actual logistics of this, but things are going very well. We've got
an ex-military manager.
An actual military man, a captain.
Wow.
A captain.
Wow.
A current serving captain in Her Royal Majesty's forces is team manager for our... Seven side, yeah. Ten side.
So me and Lee will be sorting out exactly what's going to happen. But obviously we've got a sevens team who are, you know...
No.
Ooh. We've got a sevens team.
Okay.
Which will be full of young, sprightly men. And we've got a veterans tens team. So we're fielding...
We've got two
lots of teams to fill out.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's going to be...
Are they playing on different days?
Yeah, so if you've sent an email in, I am not ignoring you. We are... compiling the emails. I'm trying to work out who plays and which teams, but because we've got Lee on the case.
Okay.
Captain Lee.
So the headline details for that, North Dorset Sevens, Gillingham, Dorset, on the 23rd, 24th, 25th of July, which is the weekend of the Lions South Africa first test, which will be played at the club. There'll be loads of drinking going on at the club. There'll be loads of rugby people at the club. Hopefully some good weather in a lovely part of the world. Egg Chasers will have a team there. And if you want to be part of it and play for our team, come along and join us, whether it's as a spectator or, as I say, as a player. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com is our email.
Mm-hmm.
And priority tickets for those for the live show we'll be doing on the Sunday there will be via Patreon, but they'll be available more generally afterwards. But to support us, patreon.com/eggchasers.
That is correct.
And we're on YouTube. Right, oh, one thing, a little guess who.
Mm.
Who did I see house hunting on my street yesterday?
Oh, AJ McGinty.
No,
is it a Sale player?
Must be.
Yes.
Must be. Mm.
Oh well, no.
It's Alex Anderson then.
No. Tommy Taylor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tommy. So I was driving.
How's he feel? I mean, I know how Jake Cooper Woolley feels to be the second best tight head on the street, but how did Tommy Taylor take it?
The second best hooker on my street.
Yeah.
Well, don't worry, I'm going to make a joke then, but I won't. I was driving my lad to Carrington, funnily enough.
Huh?
He had a game at Carrington at Sale's old training ground, which is now Sale FC. And I drove past it, I'll double take, I swear that's Tommy Taylor. I just stopped my car in the middle of the road, walked back 30 metres up the road, leaving my car with my son in it and the engine on. I said, Tommy! And then, yeah, he's looking for a house.
Wow.
So obviously he's coming back to Manchester. So we might have another Chorlton neighbour.
Yeah.
Rugby-based neighbour.
Got Jono up the road.
Yeah.
We've got Coops on... I mean, I think there's a fourth one somewhere. And then Tommy Taylor. Brilliant. Yeah.
Well, we've needed some... On my street, we've needed someone for a long time that spans the gap between myself, really, really low-ranking... profile, and Simon Rimmer, who lives at the end of the road. He lives in like the
perfect,
the best example of the best house on a street. His house is like it is like old fashioned, where the master was at.
I heard a story about Simon Rimmer the other day, but
he's a good bloke. He's a good bloke.
Do you hang around in like celebrity parties? Do you?
Oh yeah, obviously all the time. Yeah, standard.
Okay.
Anyway, so there we go. Right, there's a bit of news. Let's rattle through that. Six Nations looks set to stay on the BBC and ITV. Reaction?
Good. Yeah, fine. Yeah. Happy with that?
Yeah. There's.
I'm not happy with it.
And yeah, there's no downside for me. I'm not idealistic enough to think it has to be on there. But if it's on there, great. It makes everything easier. And it means that more people can watch it.
I will say I'm confused about it. Because I was under the impression that... Well, it makes you wonder what's true and what's not about CVC. Because the way CVC has been reported, and as you well know, I'm not a massive CVC fan. They were always going to put Six Nations behind a paywall. So why haven't they?
Well, my understanding of it was, the story originally was, it was going behind a paywall, but that was only because the original CVC plan, or the original plan for the retender, was you couldn't do joint bids. And the only way that it was free to air in the loosest sense of the word, was because... ITV and BBC had done a joint bid, and that allowed them to outbid the likes of Sky.
I believe they're getting less money for this current deal than they would have got by quite a significant amount,
and,
I believe.
And that would stack up, yeah. So
okay.
The Six Nations, sponsored by Guinness, I believe, is less lucrative than the old one, which is RBS. The deal with Gallagher is less lucrative than the old deal with
Aviva.
Avicii, yeah.
Avicii, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Poor old Avicii.
I forgot he used to do that.
And what's the other one? There's another one as well. Yeah, the TV deal, of course, with BT is slightly less than the last deal with BT. So it's trending in a certain way, and it's not in a good way.
Yeah, it's definitely not in a good way. Mm. That is interesting, though, because Six Nations is one of those sporting tournaments that is, well, it is one of the best sporting tournaments in the world. And it's not... In my mind, the Six Nations is not kind of getting any worse, getting any weaker. There's more storylines being written every year. You have competition like this year. You could have had one of five teams winning it.
Yeah, I wonder if we sort of get a little bit myopic as rugby union enthusiasts who actually watch the club game. Because it feels week in, week out, the club game is getting buffeted by all sorts of headwinds. And yet, if you don't watch club rugby and you only watch Six Nations, you would assume quite the opposite, actually.
I guess that's true. I think one thing that's probably worth mentioning, because this may come up in future conversations about various other things, but it appears that fan power may have played a role in this decision. Because, like I say, it appears that they're actually getting less money than they could have got by going with Sky, let's say. But fans were riled up to the extent that politicians started hopping on board the train.
They
love an opportunity, yeah. Yeah.
Which politician would
I can't,
be bothered
I can't with remember, but people were piping up about how it should stay on terrestrial TV. So it's something of a U-turn, as you said. Yeah.
So there are certain events that are kind of written into law, have to be free-to-air.
Wimbledon, boat race.
Yeah.
Really?
Stuff like that, yeah.
Grand National.
Six Nations in the past has certain people have tried to campaign to get that written into law, so it has to remain free-to-air. Yeah. It's my understanding that is not the case, as in it is not that. So it does surprise me that CVC would go for a deal that is
I may be wrong.
Less beneficial.
Let me know if I've got that wrong. What I'm understanding is it was less money. But yeah, obligatory. You already hinted at it. My obligatory mention that it's not behind a paywall.
It's not behind a paywall.
Half of the Six Nations is behind a paywall. Because ITV are funded by advertising, BBC are funded by your subscription.
Yeah.
Well, your tax.
And if you want a television in your house that you want to be able to watch them on.
By penalty of jail, so it's not it's not free to air. So
I am
156 quid.
Very conflicted at the moment about the whole fan power thing. I know it's more of a football thing than us. I mean, if I'm not campaigning for it, who is? Because I don't know if we've got that many fans. But yeah, I mean, who owns this stuff? Who should be able to say who it's sold to, who it isn't sold to? Where do the implications of that lie? Does it benefit rugby? Does it not benefit rugby? I don't particularly like it. I mean, I've not heard any politicians getting involved, but if there is a politician involved...
Martin Lewis on live chat says...
Forget that.
It was Cardiff West, Kevin Brennan MP was one of them.
Now, he's a councillor, isn't he?
He says Member of Parliament here.
Where? For which constituency?
For West Cardiff.
Oh, right. Okay. Whoops. Yeah.
You're naughty, Beardmore. Anyway, so that's bubbling on. What else? Mike Brown has appealed his six-week ban, as we suggested he should, because it's a win-win for Quinns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Newcastle might be without a fullback for the first 10 weeks of next season.
Or else they get a player maybe for a Premiership final. Kieran Crowley has replaced Franco Smith as Italian coach. He's done a good job at Benetton. Your beloved Benetton, JB. He's got international experience with a tier two side in Canada, so he should fit in well at Italy.
Yeah, and Franco Smith has been retained but moved sideways/upwards, diagonally in one direction or another.
He's been parked.
Yeah, but he's still employed.
I'd love to have that job.
Well, the job to be moved sideways.
I think Scott Johnson for Scotland. I could do that job.
You'd be the head man.
I the head man. Well, I don't want any coaching or responsibility. I'd like the pay packet. If you could just put me upstairs somewhere.
Yeah.
What else is going on? Australia have launched the 2027 Rugby World Cup bid.
So I'm right in saying that it's only currently Australia and Russia for 2027.
Well, Russia, you can't.
No part of me wants Russia to have it.
Absolutely not. I'm all for... Hey, and listen, you won't find a bigger advocate for growing the game in new territories, new areas, but it's much like, at some point, we'll probably have a conversation about the Dubai Sevens and the Hong Kong Sevens, and actually whether they should be going ahead. Hong Kong Sevens, certainly. There are some things which are more important than...
just money.
Than just money.
Yeah. And Russia got the FIFA World Cup pretty much on the back of that alone, I seem to think.
Yeah, not massive. Look, Russia, I get it. They get it. And I'm not entirely comfortable, whether it be Dubai or Hong Kong or Russia, been sidelined because of politics. I know why you would want to do it, but I wouldn't do it. The reason I don't want Russia to get it is because I don't want to bloody go to Russia. It's a purely selfish thing. It's a purely selfish thing.
Mm. Yeah. Australia could be a good bid.
Send it to Argentina.
Argentina would be very good. They're not bidding.
Why?
You need to get a...
That needs to happen.
Either combined South Americas or combined Americas.
I mean, haven't got a stadium.
Well, South and North America, but like Canada, USA, that's begging to happen. And
yeah.
There's talk about potentially America throwing their hat in the ring for 2031. Oh.
The problem with Ireland is...
Infrastructure?
Infrastructure, hotels. If the figures that I got told for the Japan World Cup was nearly 500,000 visitors flowing into the country for that 8-week period.
Mm.
That's a 10% increase in Ireland's population.
It's mad, isn't it?
I'm not sure they can actually house that many people at one time.
They would have to share with Wales and Scotland, I guess.
It would have to be like a, home nations or Celtic nations type approach.
Celtic nations would be...
That would be pretty cool.
They could do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what stadiums... They did use Wrexham last time. Well, when Wales held it in 99?
There was a couple of games in Wales and Scotland. Was it Wales and Scotland for the England World Cup in 2015?
I was going to say, between the football stadiums in Glasgow, the... Murrayfield, you've got a few in Scotland, and all the football grounds in
Liberty,
Scotland.
Liberty, Cardiff Stadium.
Liberty, Cardiff, Principality.
I'd love to do at least some of it in Ireland. Yeah. That would be
but
awesome.
We've got to have one in the States before then, come on.
100%. Yeah. I'm not advocating it, I'm just saying.
In fact, genuinely, I'd prefer America to get 2027. Tell you what, Australia.
The Ibiza World Cup, when they finally have that, is going to be it's going to be quite something, isn't it?
Spain would be great.
Yeah.
Spain would be awesome.
Got the hotels, they've got the beaches, they've got the stadiums.
And if you wanted to, if you couldn't take all that time off work, you could just do weekends.
If hypothetically Romania made the Spanish World Cup, they'd be treated to some pretty poor grounds, wouldn't they? Some pretty rum hotels.
Yeah. Some pretty bad food as well. Culinary skills.
Can you imagine seeing...
Staying 100 miles inland in Spain.
Yeah, so but on the flip side, can you imagine going to watch like France v New Zealand in the Nou Camp?
Yeah, I can imagine that.
It'd be amazing.
Yeah. I can absolutely imagine that.
Yeah.
It'd be so good.
Well, Castle and Dragon sold something like 15,000 tickets in the Nou Camp, which is actually amazing.
Yeah.
I think it was one of the highest attended Super League games of either the season or like last 10 years, something ridiculous.
Well, the game that we went to in Madrid was, it's not the biggest stadium, about 15,000-16,000, but incredibly, it was totally sold out and incredibly knowledgeable and passionate crowd as well.
It was a good crowd. There is, and the King of Spain was there.
And, of course.
King Carlos.
King
Carlos of Spain, that's his name, isn't it?
Oh, not Carlos Spencer.
Not
the actual king.
I can't remember.
I don't know.
I seen something in my head.
Were you thinking of Roberto Carlos?
Oh, Albert. No.
Prince Albert's Monaco.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Let's have a look. Maybe I'm thinking of Ashley Giles.
King of Spain.
that was his nickname, the King of Spain.
King of Spain.
Which is ridiculous, because he couldn't turn in for toffee.
Is it...
Juan Carlos, King... Oh, is that
Philip?
Former... I thought it was Philippe.
Which is the one who's really corrupt who's going to come back?
Philippe VI.
Is he the bearded younger guy?
He's that guy.
Yes. That's who turned up, Philippe.
King Philippe.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes. There we go.
Anyway, he came because he heard we had a tier 2 tour there.
Exactly. Right.
Those Egg Chaser boys are going fine, I'm there.
He's actually an avid listener. I don't know if you know that.
Add him to the list.
Add him to the list, indeed.
You going for a coffee with him this week?
No, I'm not.
I wonder who the highest profile listener we have is, because we know we've
I've got a secret list. I wouldn't shame them.
No. I'm not suggesting you name any, but I'm just, it's just something I suddenly wondered. I wonder if, like, during the Six Nations, you know, Prince William maybe went onto his podcatcher app and just typed in rugby.
Well, I mean,
let's check these guys out.
I mean, he does know about podcasts now, officially. He's got his own podcast.
Oh, he has.
Yeah, ooh. So, you know, it probably got the idea from us.
Yeah.
If they can do it, I can do it.
Speaking of listeners, I feel like I must apologise today. So I was at Wilmslow Rugby Club this morning with young Thomas, and a very nice chap came over, shook my hand and said, hello, long time listener. And I was, as I kind of always am, I never expect anyone to ever say anything like that. So I was a bit, I was probably a bit...
starstruck.
Yeah,
not starstruck.
Not starstruck. Dumbfounded. Yes. So, he was a very, very nice chap. He actually said he sent us some beer.
Oh, is it Phil? No, Phil.
I can't remember. But you did pass on some Cheshire-based beer.
Yes, I did.
A couple of years ago.
I think that was one of the times JB drank my share.
Yes,
that has happened a few times. But that beer was absolutely delicious. So. I must apologise to this chap, and if he sees me again, say hello again.
Well, someone called Chris shouted, hi JB, out of a car in Charlton.
There you go.
So, there you go.
Wow.
You must be so used to it, Tim, you get spotted all over the place, all the time.
No, genuinely, I don't. But I remember one time I got some friends of mine to come up for a Noel Gallagher gig in Manchester, and this is when I was on the radio on XFM. And if there's one concert you could go to where you're guaranteed to find XFM listeners,
it would be
a Noel Gallagher show. So it was a weird occasion where, like, loads of my mates that don't normally, you know, came up to Manchester. We went to bars in town, and they were like, "Oh, they thought I was legit famous." it was just a weird time. Places around Castlefield Bowl area.
Well, XFM,
all the bars we went to, they went, Tim.
Well, I have a pretty hardcore music like listenership. They were like quite into it.
Big time. And you know, every now and again I check the ratings, and Chris Miles is still lower than where I was.
I'm surprised he even has a job, Tim. Surprised he's got a job. Pathetic.
Well, he nicked it after all, so fair enough. Yeah. And I'm sure he's getting paid a lot more than I'd used to. So.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's true. But anyway.
It all works out.
Do you want to talk about the European Cup finals? Because they happened.
Yeah. Where should we start? Should we do it chronologically or in order of...
Let's go with the big one.
Yeah.
Let's go with the magnitude, yeah.
Yeah. So La Rochelle-Toulouse. This was an interesting game. Now, this was a brilliant finish.
It really was.
The last 10 minutes, really, after Toulouse scored that penalty to put them 10 points clear, and La Rochelle, it was the time in the game when the only time in the game, really, that either team properly opened up. La Rochelle knew they had to score twice. They had to score a try. And they actually opened up and started playing. And they looked great to the point where you're like, why have you not been doing this since earlier on? Why have you not been trying to get quick ball, keep the ball alive?
KBA.
Yeah. But they looked amazing for that last 10 minutes. And it was kind of disappointing that it took that long for the final to open up. But it reminded me of the other... all French affairs that we've seen where we saw...
Bordeaux-Toulouse.
La Rochelle. Toulouse-Racing.
Yes.
Where... And was there Toulouse-Clermont? Who played Clermont? Who beat Clermont? Yeah. Anyway, on all those games, including this one, it almost felt like they were too afraid to lose the game to really go on to try and win the game, which is understandable, but slightly disappointing as a spectacle, albeit we did get that amazing finish.
Yeah.
I disagree with that. I disagree.
Which bit?
They're too scared to lose it. I put the performances down to something else. So I thought the whole second half, was one of the most gripping games outside of an international which I've seen. And what I thought I saw was two teams who couldn't impose their will on the other team. And I think their game is basically done via an equation, which is we win the physical battle, and once we win that physical battle, then we can do the things with the backs which we need to do. And because neither team could get the better, I mean, some of the defence in that was awesome. The physicality was off the chart.
It really was.
And I'm thinking, like, they're not opening up here because they're not happy that they've not got the physical upper hand yet. And that's why it wasn't sort of like, oh, we don't want to play because we're worried about it. Well, we don't want to play because we can't play. You can't keep the ball alive unless you get over the gain line. And I think that was, in my mind at least, that was the difference.
Yeah, albeit what changed in the last 10 minutes. Because certainly La Rochelle's physicality, they didn't in the last 10 minutes improve that. They were going wide because they had to go wide.
I do think that was the reason why we didn't see Toulouse play the way Toulouse can with that all-court game, because they certainly couldn't get that physical foothold. Yeah. I actually think La Rochelle, they did get that physical foothold. but didn't use it in a way that they could.
Well, that,
whether that was the conditions, the stage. I mean, that's not to take anything away from Toulouse because their defence was excellent, so maybe it was that.
Well, towards the end, Toulouse started to kick more, and then Raymond Rule and co. could then counter-attack back in. But I just loved, the arm wrestle. I thought it was, it reminded me of really tense international affairs when they're just, you know, battering each other. I thought it was absolutely awesome.
It was a, particularly that second half, as you say, it was an awesome spectacle.
Do you want to know something amazing about these two teams?
Go on.
It was reported in the Times, so it's not my fact. It could be, it's either Owen Slot or it's...
Alex Lowe.
So it's one of those two. And if it's not one of those two, I apologise. That La Rochelle have two of the biggest players in the entire game, as we well know. And they're
both, Antonio and Will Skelton.
Yeah, yeah. And they're both in the region of like 140, something like that. They're enormous. Yeah, they could be, whatever they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're an American listener, that is like nearly like 300.
300
yeah,
pounds.
They're
yeah,
big
yeah,
old boys.
Yeah.
However, Toulouse have the heavier average pack weight, which blows my mind. That blows my mind.
Wow.
Like you get these enormous blokes in, and yet they're still not quite big enough.
Well, it is. These two are seriously heavyweight packs because we saw what La Rochelle did to, Sale, most notably, but also Leinster, which is an international pack. Like that Leinster pack is legit an international pack.
I think La Rochelle will have nightmares. They'll wake up in the middle of the night and they will watch that like they watch a horror movie. But particularly, I think it was like 30 minutes to half time, knocking at the door. And they blew it. The scrum after scrum. They had a dominant scrum. The two times Bottier. This is just before his red card. Oh, yeah, no, because it must have been earlier than that. Because it was just before Bottier's red card. Bottier had two goes at it, and they fluffed it up both times.
Yeah.
They had penalty after penalty, and they didn't take advantage. Then Bottier gets the red card. And as much as, you know, Ronan O'Gara was very honest afterwards, and John O'Gibbs, but Ronan O'Gara was moaning about the penalty that wasn't given at the death. But all of the focus when they talk about that game should be that period from, I think maybe it was 20 minutes to half an hour, where they had to score and they
Well, the reality of the situation is, we would have been having free rugby if Ken Barlow, it wasn't Ken Barlow, it was Ohio West, kicked two kicks.
8 points missed, two pens and a conversion.
Oh, was it two pens? Oh, then he wins it.
But he hit the post
twice,
of which if he'd have slotted those two, because one was a conversion, one was a penalty, if he slots those two post misses,
and that's
it is free rugby.
And the second or one of those kicks that hit the post was what led to all of those scrums on their line.
Yeah,
where they couldn't
20,
then
25 minutes. Yeah, because they did. Because even towards the end of that first half, before and after Bottier got the red card, they had all that possession, and I think they maybe got one penalty out of it, but they should have. They had... After that, where it hit the post, they had a scrum because Toulouse took it over their line. They had an attacking scrum 5 metres out, just to the right hand side of the post. A perfect attacking scrum. And they won the penalty from the scrum, but the pass, which would have put, I think it was Doulan in, was over his head and he knocks it on.
Yeah.
So many opportunities there.
Maybe this is not a real thing that happened, but maybe it is. Do you think that for whatever reason it is, La Rochelle have won over a lot of hearts in rugby?
Massively.
It feels like it.
Massive.
Everyone loves an underdog, don't they?
Yeah.
But they're not an underdog.
Well, they are.
So they've never won the top 14.
Never won the top 14.
No.
And so Exeter's journey from the second division in England to Champions of Europe took, what, 10 or 11 years?
Yes. Yeah.
La Rochelle, if they'd have won yesterday, would have done it in 7.
That is true.
Yeah, and they've missed a step because they've not won a domestic trophy. Yeah.
And they have a couple of lads, in fairness, who have been there the whole time. Antonio, and I think Aldrit has been there the whole time.
There's at least, I think there might be three guys played in the second division that were in the team yesterday. It might have been Doulan, might have been one of them.
Yeah, unless
Doulan's come back, because Doulan's been
he's
around
somewhere.
A little bit.
Anyway, it was at least two or three of the guys played in the second division when they got promoted 7 years ago.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a cool story.
It's an awesome story.
There's no part, you know, when you watch me, think not exactly an underdog. You know, not exactly.
I do know that
plucky amateurs
on paper, the teams match up pretty nicely. Albeit probably Toulouse do have the bigger names and the bigger stars, but it's not an underdog story if they win from a team sheet perspective.
Ken Barlow was a World Cup winner, for example.
And Victor Vito.
And Victor Vito. Victor Vito played.
Yeah.
Did he play?
Yeah. It was nice when him and Kaino went off together.
They both went off after about 55 minutes. Well, I'll give you another little tidbit from this. Toulouse pack featured two guys in their late 30s winning it for the first time, which is awesome.
Kaino and...
Tacori.
Joe Tacori, who... Did you see the souvenir he...
I did.
Did he take someone's arm? Did he take an opposition arm? A leg?
He took a corner flag.
Ah.
With the pads and everything.
Very good.
I believe in the...
Highly illegal, I hope it gets reported.
In the Challenge Cup final, Vincent Rattes attempted to take one. I don't know whether he was successful or not. I know that Joe Tacori did get it back to France, and apparently he was politely asked by some EPCR officials to hand it back, and he just said, no. And well, what are you going to do? Yeah, if you can get it, if you can take it off me, it's
yours. The EPCR have got a checkered past in finals. I don't know if you know this. Do you remember when they... So the last time Toulouse won a Heineken Cup final, I'm pretty sure that... Guy Nuvez got locked up by the police for a short time because they thought he was a fan. So he's busy celebrating. The official goes, get him off, get him off.
I want to see what Roman Intermac does.
By the way, that wasn't EPRC that did that.
I want to know what Roman Intermac does with the trophy because I know it's the tradition in France when you win the top 14 shield, you have to treat it.
Yeah.
You have to treat it badly and have fun and games with it. So Roman Intermac had loads of people that didn't understand that, saying how outrageous it was that he was doing bodyboarding on at the beach.
What would you like to do with the top 14 trophy? You got any ideas?
The top 14 trophy?
Give me table tennis.
Put some wheels on it and
skate you down a hill.
Yeah.
What frisbeeing it into a into a quarry and then having people shoot at it like clay pigeon?
That's a nice shout.
I'm not sure I could frisbee it. It's massive. I couldn't frisbee it very far.
I mean, the French are pretty lax with these sort of things, so I'm sure there's some military guys somewhere which will happily help out.
Well, like a trebuchet.
Yeah, exactly.
Fire it into a quarry.
And had La Rochelle won it, then Brice Doolan could have taken it onto the set of another erotic movie that he stars in that we've mentioned on a previous episode.
There's all sorts of things that we can do.
And if you're wondering what's Tim talking about, it's a previous episode, and Brice Doolan really did feature in a... No, it wasn't an erotic film. That gives the wrong idea. It was a
film with eroticism in it.
It was a regular film with a very erotic scenes that Brice Doolan was in.
Mm.
Good looking fella.
Can I give a shout out to Dumaru?
Oh, yeah.
So for two reasons. One that got spoken about quite a lot during the game, which was
the try-saving tackle
on Chesney Colby, which was awesome. Yeah, it was. And then only a few minutes later, and this it didn't get brought up at all, Toulouse break down the right wing. Chesney Colby gets the ball inside La Rochelle's 22 on the wing. He steps inside his opposite man, and Dumaru was the man coming across and absolutely nails him into touch. They didn't even show a replay of that tackle. It was an awesome tackle, 5 yards from his own try line with Chesney Colby dancing around him. And he absolutely nailed it. Two amazing try-saving tackles. Mm. The second one, just no one said anything.
Yeah.
Poor Geoffrey Dumaru.
Oh, Dumaru, he is class. Quality.
Let's talk about, so was there, objectively, was there enough of a difference between the tackle that got a red card and the tackle that got, got penalty only?
Great question.
I'm surprised. So I think the second one, it wasn't head, but from what I've seen in the past, the head-neck area does seem to get judged as the same thing.
You get hit in the neck, you get hit in the head. I mean, so obviously you don't, but still.
The force was different. As in, I would have been happy for the second one to be a yellow card. I think that would have been consistent application of the law. But yeah, I was very... I think the Bottier one was definitely a red card. That level of force, and he wears it on the head.
I was going to say, Bottier was... So yeah, I take your point. If you just purely look at, and you're right, in the framework that the referees are operating under, force is one of the metrics they use to make the decision, so fine. But like almost that's penalising Lavani Bottier for just being
monstrous,
because I well no I'm
yeah
I,
no
I
no no I'm with I'm like that yeah. Lavani Bottier is so powerful.
He is so
that hit was spectacular.
That hit was unbelievable.
Yeah,
but, and it's the kind of thing that if he just gets that timing a little bit better, or even just his body position a little bit better, he still does. He still puts that monstrous hit in, and he does it legally.
The wonderful,
it was inches away from being legal.
The wonderful thing about that hit is it opens up the fault line in rugby, which is the difference between people who think that is awesome and I want to be like Lavoine Bottier, and the people who, I don't know what why they are watching rugby at the moment, that is disgusting and no one will ever play the game ever again.
Well, as Phil said, he was inches away from
an amazing legal hit.
Amazing
hit. Yeah. So, yeah. The forcing is interesting. It only comes into play if the hit is illegal, right? Because
if it's a legal hit, go for it as much force as you possibly can.
So I do think it's an illegal hit. I look at it and I think it's definitely illegal. You've got to go.
Hey,
it's half the force, you've got to go.
Just looking at a still photograph sometimes does not tell the story. However, when I look at those two tackles from opposing teams at different points in the game, in terms of contact, I don't see a difference. So I'm totally with you that I think it should have been a yellow card.
I give him a red. I give them both red. If I think one's red, the other one's a red. Because they both have force. Just because one guy's a little weaker than the other, he's still trying.
Yeah, and also, it wasn't just that it was Lavani Bottier making the hit for La Rochelle. It was that it was Rory Arnold taking the hit for Toulouse, I think. Or someone, it was someone much bigger.
Because it can't be Rory Arnold taking the hit.
It was Midar who took the hit.
Who took the hit for...
Was it... it wasn't Uini Antonio.
It wasn't Skelton, was it?
No. Yeah, I think it was Skelton, actually.
Was it?
No, because there's a high one on Skelton that never got reviewed.
Yeah.
And I was amazed
Skelton
at that. No, you're right.
It was a less forceful hit. But yeah, but...
No, it was Aldrit.
Was it... Yes.
It was Aldrit.
I think one's red, the other one's red. I can't tell the difference between the two, other than the fact that Lavani Bottier is an absolute monster.
Yeah, and I was disappointed that that was the outcome, given that they stopped the game. I actually thought Luke Pearce did a really good job.
So I think he did a great job overall.
Yeah.
I think that Toulouse hit could have been a yellow card. I could actually see how it could be a red card, although I wouldn't want it to be. I think the bit that I was disappointed at was the end of the game from Luke Pearce. Because I think... So I watched the last 10 minutes again today. There were four incidents in the last 2 minutes that could have been... there could have been one knock-on. That's a little bit dubious. But there could have been actually three legitimate La Rochelle penalties in that last 2 minutes.
Which is what Ronan O'Gara was disappointed about.
Yeah. And there were. It wasn't like there was one incident that was missed because that happened.
Because I can't actually remember them.
So there was... God.
There was one where they looked like a legit jackal from La Rochelle on the ball. At
right.
Yeah, there was one sealing off at a ruck.
Yeah, I saw that one.
The last play of the game where DuPont passes to Ntamack too early. Ntamack's got 10 seconds to kill. He tries to like jog it around and gets snagged 5 metres from his own line. There is two Toulouse players go off their feet trying to roll 100%. La Rochelle players. And that is, this clip, is it Marchand, the reserve hooker? He goes off his feet and the La Rochelle player is still on his feet jackling the ball and he is like on the floor trying to pull him over, but Luke Pearce's arm has already gone up for the penalty for Toulouse. So that one, and there was another one on the right wing. There were three clear that could definitely have been La Rochelle penalties.
Yeah, I definitely remember one of them and I remember saying to the guy next to me like, penalty.
Yeah,
but I didn't have the volume on, so I didn't know if that was a...
If that
was one of them or not.
If one of those becomes a penalty, then because La Rochelle missed the kick, it becomes an easy decision. They have to go for the corner. So they kick for the corner. They've got a line out 5 metres from Toulouse's line. Well, on that last one, you could have done.
Yeah.
That last one really could. But the earlier two were about 40 yards out.
Maybe you are better with the line out because you've not got Bottier on the field. So you're going to be outnumbered out wide. So what are you going to do? Maybe you go for the line out because you've got the drive then.
Yeah.
And you're not outnumbered. Doesn't matter so much.
But as we say, the game's played over 80 minutes.
It is.
It's not won or lost on the final decision. La Rochelle have the chances to win, and I think they'll be absolutely gutted.
And yeah, the world is a little bit better, isn't it, when Toulouse are on top of the table again?
It does. It's felt like for the last few years, because this Toulouse team, this is not out of the blue. They've been building with this kind of team for the last few
years.
They're
still the current top 14 holders, because last season's tournament was abandoned. They got to the semi-finals of Europe last season. So yeah, this has been building, and it does feel good.
And I reference something Alex Sanderson said, because obviously he's a man that knows his way around a European trophy, which is you have to build into it. And if you think about what Toulouse have been doing, they made the semis last year, although it feels like it was only 6 months ago, because it was only six months ago that they were in the semis.
It was. remarkably recently.
Yeah. But you can see that progression. As for La Rochelle, yeah, they'll obviously be disappointed. Who wouldn't be disappointed? But they've got nothing to worry about. If you're making European finals, don't worry about it.
Yeah, the next few years will be. Unless they do a Clermont where they're always the bridesmaid.
Yep. Which is entirely possible.
It is possible, but it's a hell of a team, that La Rochelle side.
Great. If you're on the YouTube feed right now, just hit that like button, would you? Apparently that helps.
Really helps, apparently, yeah. Apparently, I've not seen any difference.
It just means other people that might like rugby, it might just go, oh, check this out. So, yeah, that'd be great if you would. Much appreciated. And keep your thoughts coming. Hi to Sam, who's on first time on the live pods. And
any questions?
Loving
on
it, lads. Yeah, any questions or thoughts, chuck them in there and we can get to that. I'll tell you what I will do. I'll just mention, before we go on to the Challenge Cup final, we had a bit of midweek rugby since the last podcast.
Yes, we did.
And how good was that? How much would you like to see more midweek rugby?
So I phoned Premiership Rugby about this because I'm a pain in the nose. I was like, why can't we have more Premiership Rugby? Player welfare issue. But of course, it's not really a player welfare issue, is it? It's a negotiating point issue. If there's enough money involved or there's enough incentive, we will have midweek rugby.
And that is definitely true, because you see it more in football, but TV money, TV dictates game times, dictates what games are shown when. And if there's enough people watching, there will be more midweek.
If we can have midweek European Cup games, why can't we have midweek Premiership games?
There's occasionally a Thursday night.
Thursday night, isn't it?
For the Challenge Cup.
Well, I'll tell you what, just not wanting to open up this can of worms, I'll just chuck it out there. In France, they get midweek games every week.
I was hoping you'd bring this up.
No, I don't want to talk about that. I've
been doing a bit of research.
Sorry, it's not to say I don't want to talk about that. I absolutely do want to talk about that. But let's do you know what I thought about this? So what JB's referring to is the English model, the French model. Is there some stuff that I'm wondering, is there another way besides going to a ring fence league where we can actually grow the game in the way that everyone wants, to mitigate the financial worries that the Premiership clubs have, yada yada yada. So I've been looking at what they do in France and if there's anything there.
There is absolutely a lot of lessons to be learned from France.
And I think we'll probably, we might start from different opinions, but I think that we'd agree on a lot of things, which is why I think in the build up to June the 11th, which is the RFU Council's vote on the suggested 3-year moratorium on promotion and relegation, let's get that. Let's get Phil to moderate.
You
can moderate. You can be
ask questions.
You can be David Dimbleby and
perfect.
And you can moderate us, and we can put our cases out there, because one of the big things about this is this vote's happening, and I don't think there is going to be discussion about it ahead of time, except for through people like us, which is ridiculous.
Let's take it
upon ourselves to do it.
I'm not convinced that the people voting on this have really spent the time looking into it. It's such a complex situation that I think when they vote, I don't think they're going to be thinking of how it is that they solve the issue of relegation, how it is they make the league better, all of these different things that they need to do.
The consequences and the unintended consequences for an extended period of time. Yeah.
Yeah. But what I do think is the case is that these RFU councillors, there's 65 of them representing each of the counties in England, they should know that they are there voting to represent their constituent members of the clubs that are in their county. That's why that role exists. And so if you are a member of a rugby club, your RFU councillor represents you. So make them work for you as a fan and for your club. So one of the things that really bothers me about this, and again, let's do this in a special podcast, but the general point is that whatever you think about what should happen, promotion, relegation, etc., different models, all the rest of it, I think the general point is that the majority of fans, I believe, don't want it. And the RFU councillors are going to vote not with them in mind. And they are there to represent us. They're a union.
And this is what concerns me, which is don't lobby your RFU councillor until you have listened to our podcast where we outline both of the positions.
Okay.
Because you need to understand exactly what it is that ring fencing will achieve. I'm not for ring fencing. I'm not against ring fencing. It's very, very important that you understand what it is that they're trying to achieve before you say to your counsellor, do this or that.
Yeah, but fundamentally, yes, okay, that's fair. But fundamentally, an RFU counsellor is there to represent the constituent clubs in the county. The members make up the club. So effectively, they're there to represent us. They're not there to represent 30 very wealthy individuals who own Premiership clubs and their interests.
No, but you know what? If the councillor, say, in the Northwest, I would probably say to them at the moment, you should work with Sale Sharks because it is in our interest to make sure that Sale Sharks are as strong as possible, particularly Sale Sharks, actually.
I'd say it's in the RFU councillor's interest to make sure that every one of the hundreds and hundreds of grassroots clubs in Lancashire are achieving the goal of growing the game long term.
That's why an
RFU councillor exists.
Yeah, but I think the...
Not for Sale Sharks.
Priorities... Well, no, because they're intertwined, right? So if you're in the Northwest, it's very important that... Sale Sharks do a remarkable job.
Oh, I know. I'm not doubting that.
But if you are the councillor for Norfolk, I think you probably vote against it. Does that make sense? Because I don't... Because you've got no pro club. You know, you do have a DPP and whatnot, but that'll probably be linked to Leicester Tigers or someone. It is in your best interest that there is a way for your local community to have a club at the highest level. The priorities of the councillors in Norfolk and Leeds and Cumbria may well be very different to those in Leicester, Northwest, Richmond, so on and so forth.
Fair.
That's what I would say.
Fair.
Anyway, let's save it for the special podcast.
Let's do a special podcast on that.
So the midweek games.
Yeah, Sam Simmons broke that Premiership try scoring record.
It feels like an
smashed
age ago.
Smashed through the Premiership try scoring
three
record.
Games to go and he's on 19.
Yeah, ridiculous.
The previous one was held by Dominic Chapman and Christian Wade. Do you know any of the others that are on the list?
List of what, sorry? List of...
Top Premiership try scorers of all time.
In a single season.
A single season, you mean?
In a single season.
Yeah, Neil Back's...
Well, Thomas Waldron.
Isn't he?
Thomas Waldron, Neil Back, Tom Varndell probably. Yeah, what, Cueto must be on there?
Vandell's a good shout. Chris Ashton is on one of them, I think.
Yeah.
Early days with Northampton.
I had the page, and now I've lost the page. Damn it. Yeah, it was Dominic Chapman from Richmond all those years ago. Oh, I've lost the page, never mind.
But lots of big names, and lots of tries scored.
Yeah.
Neil Back got one of them.
Yeah. So the two big things for me from the midweek games, obviously... Exeter had a fairly routine win over London Irish with Sam Simmons breaking the record. Bristol had a routine win against a 14-man Gloucester. Bristol performing very well. And Northampton messed it up. Oh. Their shot to get... The last 2 weeks where they could have put some pressure on Harlequins.
Fair play Newcastle, though.
Yeah.
Two wins for them.
You're absolutely right.
Well, you know, having a big ball carrier helps.
The silverback is back.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, very disappointing for Northampton, who, over the last few years, they've done, since Chris Boyd took in, they've done some amazing things, but they've also had some like inexplicable, like, awful, not just performances, but like inexplicably awful extended periods of time. And these two games that they've lost now to themselves eliminate their opportunity for getting top four is just disappointing.
I also think actually what's happened is they've ended up where they really are because...
Reverting to the mean.
Well,
yeah,
because two of their victories were COVID victories.
Yeah.
So had they achieved a playoff spot over, say, Quinns, and they had two COVID victories under their belt, I think it might have been a false position for them. In the same way as Worcester look like they've got three wins on paper. They haven't. They've only got one.
Yeah.
So multiple things about this, right? Number one, when this season is over, which it effectively is now, but you know, when it's properly over, I think we'll look back and say, God, that wasn't very competitive. Like, the top four are so much further ahead than the chasing pack. It's very disappointing, actually. Yep. So that's the first... I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't expecting that.
So that's really quite upsetting. The other thing is, when I think about Northampton, at the start of the season, they're on one of the worst losing streaks in the club's career. So the revision back to mean is definitely something which I think is correct. Are they that good? I think in parts are that good, but I think they're easily found out as well. They've got a bit of a soft underbelly.
They've got some amazing, talented players, and when it clicks, they look amazing. Like some of the tries that they can score with that back line, and weaving some of their forwards into that back line as well, because some of the skills that they've got across the team are amazing. But you're right on the soft underbelly.
Like they're
when,
not...
And it's when the going gets tough, they can get found wanting. But it's not... The last two games have been that they've lost have been Gloucester at home and Newcastle away, which are very winnable games for that Northampton team.
If I'm a Saints fan, I'm obviously disappointed I didn't make the top four. And I'm just thinking about how would you honestly review the season? Well, would they expect top four at the start of the season?
No.
Maybe.
I would not. I would say no, you would not, because of the one that they were on last season.
You wouldn't expect to lose it to Quinns either. That's the other thing.
True.
And you look at their squad across the board, no one's played badly. No, you can't say, oh, we're weak at this position, weak at that position. There's a few. Go on.
There's a few big names. Well, I don't like chucking players under the bus.
It's not so much chucking under the bus. I think the whole squad is playing at, say, a B-plus level. They all need to play, like, 5% better, which is a rubbish way to... It's not like they've got an immense strength.
Yeah.
And they need to...
You can't bring... Because last season, their scrum was really weak. They've improved that. Perhaps, it can still be improved.
Yeah.
And they've lost an all-black tight head who's going back to...
I wasn't scrummaging that well, anyway.
And he's been injured for most of the season, and now he's going.
I think James Grayson's ace, but one thing to notice is when Dan Biggar wasn't there, they could never make their mind up who was their 10. Sometimes it was Dan Grayson, then it was George Furbank coming in at 10.
James Grayson.
Yeah.
Furbank.
Then it was Furbank at 10. Then
there's another one,
I think Malander played 10 at one point.
Malander, yeah. I have some thoughts about Stuart Hooper.
Do you?
Yeah, I did. But I did.
Really?
I did an hour and 20 purely on Stuart Hooper on the Bath Rugby Plug, so you can listen to that instead.
I can imagine Bath fans who are frustrated would love that.
It was a very good
catnip
podcast
for them.
A great podcast. But still, one of the things about Bath, which I think is the same with Northampton, is they're very hard to understand where you improve a team. Because if you are good consistently throughout the team, not brilliant, just good.
Just solid.
Yeah, what is the thing that you need to improve on first?
Yeah, if there's no fundamental weakness.
Yeah, which I don't think there is. I mean, what we say, they need to be a bit harder. Well, okay, I don't know how you do that.
Well, I don't know. I think Bath, it's personnel. Bath, it's coaching. And Gervin Dempsey, their attack coach, has left.
Which has been rumoured for a long time, actually.
Yeah. So that maybe that'll have an impact. Sometimes things just don't work out. And I think Northampton, I don't think it's coaching, because Vesti's great.
I don't think it's coaching either.
Boyd's really great. So I think it might be personnel. And we talked about their scrum being so bad. And when they're on that bad run, they had no scrum.
Yeah.
They sorted the scrum out. They started winning games and being competitive. Yep. But they just haven't quite won enough.
Yeah.
Which is fair. If they finish fifth, I think that's about where they're at. And that's not a bad season.
And there could be an element as well of, if you have a Southern Hemisphere coach, a very successful one, he knows what he wants. But does him knowing what he wants necessarily chime with what he needs? And there might be a learning curve there, which is, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere, you need to coach more defence. You need to be a little bit more pragmatic. And can he blend what he does so well, which is bloody brilliant, actually, with what is required and what is done at, say, Leicester Tigers or, you know, wherever else?
You say that Quinn's defence is not good, and they're still top four.
Yeah, but when you've got Marcus Smith, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, he is.
Just do whatever you want.
There's a slight difference, mate.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
One thing I have noticed is a slight narrative that's been creeping in over the last weeks about, see, no relegation, and people say it's boring, how good are these games? One thing I would say is that you could see the intensity in some of those lower table games just ratchet right up as soon as they change the Champions Cup to the top eight.
Eight spaces.
Which I totally disagree with, by the way. I think that is a farce. The top tier, which is meant to be the best of the best, is now three quarters of every domestic league.
Yeah, exactly.
It's ridiculous.
I've got two thoughts on this. Number one, there is a vast difference between entertaining and meaningful. Right? It's not meaningful.
Absolutely. Yeah. Second half of the Champions Cup final. Yeah. Where actually, one scrum, suddenly you're like, oh my God, this really matters.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
There's a Champions Cup on the line.
Yeah. Yeah. So, meaningful rugby is what we want. Just because people are throwing it out the back door and trying really hard doesn't mean it's meaningful. Sorry.
48-54. See, it's an amazing product.
Everyone clap like seals.
No.
Thank you. I mean, it's not bad to watch. It isn't bad to watch. I'm not saying
that
it's...
balance between defence and attack is so crucial. And like Super Rugby, when it was high scoring stuff, people used to try and say, oh, Super Rugby is just on a different level. When you watch it sometimes, it's like, no, this is not good. So they've not had to work hard enough for that.
The other thought is, when you get relegated, okay, it's obvious, isn't it, that your coach is going to go. He deserves to go. Not always, because some coaches have survived relegation, come back, like Dean Richards and I'm sure some others somewhere. But Dean Richards would be the one I'm thinking of. Did Dean Ryan survive relegation and come back? He might have too. But generally speaking, if you're a player and you think the gaffer might go because he's rubbish and you get relegated, and relegation is such a big deal that it's almost warranted that you should have to resign, then maybe you don't play your hardest because, well, the gaffer's going to go. I'll just impress the next guy and my contract runs for 3 years. But when you know that the coach is going to be there next year regardless because it's ring-fenced, well, he has the final say on your career, so you best play hard. So there is a different incentive there.
That said, in terms of loads and loads of tries, the Bristol Gloucester game was so much fun.
It was so much fun.
But Bristol had to work hard for all of those scores. They just butchered loads of them. But Killian Hickey has just mentioned Bristol with eight disallowed tries. Yeah, that was
minimum.
Absolutely insane.
Did it take them until like the 76th minute to get the bonus point?
Yeah, and Martin saying, is Callum Sheedy becoming Wales's Finn Russell? Some of his passes out of the back and no-look passes. Yeah, he's got skills, hasn't he? Yeah. But let's just talk about Finn Russell for a second. The cargo trousers he wore at the Monaco Grand Prix.
I've not seen these.
Have you not?
No.
They look like Top Man trousers circa 1997.
So 1997 to maybe 2002, that kind of vintage.
That window.
I was interviewing a rather famous individual who played for Toulon once, who claimed that he went out with Prince Albert, or one of the Monaco princes in Monaco, in shorts. And to get into a nightclub, he needed trousers. So the prince instructed one of the bouncers to give this famous player his trousers, and he did. so he could get into the club.
The princess, what's her name?
No idea.
Princess Charlotte or something like
that. Oh,
she came to the World Rugby Awards when we were there.
That's right, she did.
She looked amazing.
I don't remember her.
I can't remember. I was more interested in where's Johnny Sexton. I want to interview him.
It's quite to Khaleesi.
Yeah, it's quite to Khaleesi and CJ Stander.
Yeah. And Ryan Crossey.
And Doddy Weir.
And Jamie Roberts.
Oh, hang on, was Ryan Crossey the year before?
I don't remember Ryan Crotty.
I spoke to Ryan Crotty in the nightclub. So, in the club afterwards.
Yeah. Do you know Do you know what my secret trick is to talk to people? I always say that Phil wants to meet them. So if you're the famous person, you're not. It's not me being a fanboy, right?
Sorry to have to do this to you, my friend here.
Oh my god, Tim, is it Tim? Right. This, I know, sounds odd, but my friend Phil is a massive fan. Do you mind coming over and saying hello?
And to be fair,
I am not saying no, can he?
I am a massive Ryan Crotty fan.
I'm not a Ryan Crotty fan. Who is this guy? He's not saying no, is he?
I remember JB interrupting. So Faf de Klerk and Aaron Smith were having a moment. Two of the world's best scrum halves.
Yeah.
They were both blind. They'd both had an awesome night in the club. They'd come out to get a bit of fresh air and to have a little bit of a chat. And they were just stood having a chat. And JB said, JB looked at Aaron Smith and Faf de Klerk and said, they're missing one person. Got in between them. Come here, lads, let's have a picture.
And then we cropped Aaron Smith out. Good times in Monaco.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was awesome.
But midweek rugby, let's have it. But GPU, thank you for your message in the live chat. Said, midweek championship rugby, that could be a way to get midweek games.
Yeah.
If someone wants to pay for it,
yep.
Get it. Get
absolutely.
It up there.
That'd be great. It's a great shout. Right. Challenge Cup final then. Leicester lost narrowly to Montpellier. So we have an all-French champions in Europe this season.
And I'm so disappointed in Leicester. Because they had it all. So that first 10 minutes was a demonstration of how they needed to play this game and how they were going to win this game, which was Montpellier get ball in Leicester's half. Leicester turn it over. Leicester then win a penalty. Leicester then use their monstrous driving maul. Montpellier splinter. Leicester get another penalty, kick for the corner. I think they got a third penalty and take the 3 points. And you just watch that and think, how are Leicester going to lose this?
Yep.
How could they were winning penalties left, right, and centre. They were turning over the ball. Their driving maul was unstoppable by that Montpellier team unless they did it illegally. And they repeatedly did it illegally, which bumped up the Leicester penalties even more. So how are Leicester possibly going to lose this?
Well, they're going to lose it by, let's not do any more driving mauls, lads. Let's not bother with that. It's too good.
The detail, I mean, obviously, Borthwick is a detail man. But the stuff which goes on with Leicester's driving wall, I mean, on paper, it shouldn't really stand up to Montpellier. Because Montpellier are much bigger man for man.
It should be at least comparable. Because, I mean, Leicester's, it's an international front row.
I mean, an ex-international front row, right?
Well, Genge's current international.
And then Dan Cole
and...
It is. Yeah. Let's not downplay their achievements.
Yeah.
Yes, it is an international.
And they've not lost any weight, those two, since they were playing internationally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an enormous South African back row.
They are quite big. They're abrasive rather than big. They're not enormous, are they?
They're big. One of the switches.
Vise is not tall. He's about the same height as me, but he's deep.
Like CJ Standard style.
Actually, one of the switches. So there was two injuries in the game that did switch the balance of power a bit more in Montpellier's favour in terms of the driving maul, and that was Brink going off. Injured, which when Tommy Riffel, who was great on the floor, great around the park, but not as big and strong, and Uedrago.
Is he still playing?
Lithe flanker, for Montpellier. He went off, and it was Jacques Duplessis, the second row, came on in his place and played back row. And that had at least a 10kg loss for Leicester, and at least probably more 10kg gain for Montpellier. And that happened towards the end of the first half. Both of those happened, and that swung the balance more in Montpellier's favour.
Yeah.
You've got to remember, this team shouldn't even be in the competition. They should be in the championship.
They should be in the championship.
Right?
Yeah.
So you've got to you've got to bear that in mind. Leicester Tigers do not deserve to be in the European Cup final. But Challenge Cup final. But they are there. The progress they've made is remarkable. I've said it for weeks and weeks and weeks now. And these guys have got nothing to worry about. Their foundations are absolutely rock solid. They'll be fine.
And the bit that they do need, because where it came down, where they lost this game was, there was two moments of absolute magic from Montpellier that scored two tries. They did nothing for the rest of the game.
Am I right? No points got scored in the last 20 minutes.
No, it was a one-point game for 20 minutes.
Yeah. So there's so many opportunities there.
And they... Leicester kicked so much ball away, particularly in that last 10 minutes. And
we knew they were set up to play the game in that fashion when they picked Wigglesworth over Youngs. But like you say, the last 20 minutes when they'd had such a dominant maul, I don't know, I would have tried to, and they'd been so successful at extracting penalties when having possession, like you said, I would have gone down that route, but yeah.
But the difference was, there was two moments of magic from
Rattez,
and it was Usun, but it was fullback Boutier as well in that move. For Montpellier, the two, and they were moments of magic, and they did nothing else for the whole of the rest of the game. And Leicester, even though they could get the territory, the field position, and the penalties, they just didn't have that magic, because it was going to come through. In the past, it comes through Nadolo or Ford. And Nadolo was shut out by his former teammates because they understand him. And Ford was shut out of the game because they knew he's the threat.
Mm.
So you take those two bits. And why Leicester should be really positive is you add in a couple more offensive players, offensive threats, which I believe they will do in the next 12 months. That team will be much, much more dangerous because they've got the foundations in place.
Yeah.
Just, is anyone surprised that Philippe Saint-André still gets these jobs?
the turnaround he's overseen is pretty massive. He came in at, what, just Christmas?
Yeah.
And they were languishing in the top 14. They've still got a job on to survive.
But genuinely,
though. No, they will survive.
They will survive,
It's a poor season for the top four season.
Yeah, but genuinely, though, look at the players they have. Look at the amount of money that they spend. How bad would you do if you just hit the scene and let them go out there?
Well, how bad was the previous coach?
Yeah,
who was the previous coach?
I don't know.
What was going on there? Now, Saint-André is an interesting character because he seems to have one trick and one trick only, which is massive players. Massive.
Which, in fairness...
Would work.
They already had that.
Well, yeah.
But he's come in, and with no time to prepare or get in players, he's actually just managed to turn a team that were losing into a team that have been winning.
I guess.
And fair play, you can't argue with that. Adrian Sinclair got in touch. He emailed us, contacteggchasers@gmail.com. Just highlighting Austin Healey's change of mind on Steve Borthwick. So this weekend, on Friday morning, I read an article in the Telegraph, and Austin Healey quite rightly said, Steve Borthwick doing an incredible job at Leicester. The old Tigers DNA is reappearing. November last year, and I'm not saying this to shame, because actually I think this is to Austin Healey's credit, that he comes out with punchy opinions, but he's more than willing to go, do you know what? I got that wrong. Actually, here's what I think. He said in November last year, Tigers have made a mistake in appointing Steve Borthwick as head coach. He has never coached properly before at this level. He's very binary. Blah, 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 blah. He's a robot, I think, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Basically, for a club like Leicester, I think it is a mistake. So Steve Borthwick has...
I agree with everything Austin Healey said then, and I agree with it now.
That's what I was going to say. I wasn't saying this to say Austin Healey didn't know what he was talking about in November. I'd say that's where a lot of people were.
Yeah.
We were, listen to our podcast, we were scathing of Leicester at the back end of last season when they were just sending kids out to get slaughtered.
Mm. Literally.
And we're all very, very complimentary now.
Yeah, I don't think being a robot or being binary is necessarily a bad thing, as long as you're a pretty good robot, as long as your assistant, he understands what he wants.
Well, one of the things Austin Healey was saying back in November is, I think he's been in an England setup where for a short period of time you can be full on 100% intensity and demand massive improvement over short periods of time. When you go over a club and you've got to be there week after week after week, he said, I don't think that's going to work. But it's working.
I'm not sure that is what Steve Borthwick's doing, though. Do you think that's what he's doing?
Well, no, but that may be not what he's doing. Were he to have done that, it would not have worked.
Yes, exactly. That's the risk of... That's certainly what Austin Healey was expecting when Borthwick first came in.
That he would map his style at international level onto club level.
He's probably shown his flexibility.
The thing is with Steve Borthwick is, yes, he has had a lot of experience under Eddie Jones. You'd say the majority of his CV as a coach is built on his experience under Eddie Jones, particularly his Japan experience, and latterly, of course, his England experience. But he's also been under some different style of coaches in Saracens. So he has a whole range of things to offer. What I really like about him, and I have literally just said this, but he is super clear on what you want. And to me, I'll give you an example of someone who's not super clear is Stuart Hooper. Right, and it's not just to knock Stuart Hooper, he's just not very clear about what he wants. Whereas I know exactly what Steve Borthwick wants, and I think everyone can appreciate that. Yeah. Now, if you don't want to do that...
You can say, you're not clear on what he wants based on what he said to you. We don't know what he says in his team meetings at Bath.
No, we don't, no.
But the other thing I would say is Steve Borthwick has always been an incredibly analytical... He's a rugby nose.
Yeah.
More than any of us, particularly with lineouts. So when my brother was coming into the Bath squad, Borthwick and Grewcock were the locks. And Nick used to sit with Borthwick for hours just doing lineout prep.
More latterly, of course. Your brother had experience with him when he was coaching at Saracens. Not coaching at Saracens, because I don't know. If you don't know, the England coaches used to use Saracens as a test bed for things that they want to run. And they need to run against an opposition. So they used London Scottish. So he's had a front seat for him, not only growing up, but as a coach as well.
Yeah. And he's unbelievably analytical.
Mm.
But it's one thing to know what you're talking about, another thing to make sure your players understand and execute.
Can I give you a quote which I heard off a coach this week? I won't tell you which coach, because it's just a general chat, but I'm really interested in it. And I'm going to read the book which you recommended to. But this quote sort of haunts me, because I'm not sure if it's true. But to start the conversation, it was, process is the opposite of skill. Process is the opposite of skill, and that is the mindset. Mm. What do you think of that?
I don't think the two are necessarily related.
So the process would be...
Or not diametrically opposed.
Yeah,
anyway.
They're not mutually exclusive. You can have skilled processes.
Yeah, so structured rugby is basically when you substitute something. It's a substitute for skilled rugby, and I do agree.
Okay. So from that point of view, I understand. So that would be play. So it's playing what you see versus playing what you've practiced and what you've rehearsed.
I think so. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, that I can get more on board with. I think that quote on its own, it needs some more. There's not enough.
That was the opening quote, and I don't want to say too much about it because I haven't read the book, and I'm currently looking at things in coaching, not that I'll use, but things I do not understand and see if I can understand them a little bit more. And this is one of them. This is sort of like the, not new age thinking of coaching, but the sort of the, what's the word for it? Like the helicopter thinking style of coach.
Okay.
For want of a better word. And one of the things I thought of is there not a skill in putting together a process? Like a really good process is actually quite skillful.
And there's lots of processes that have skills at every stage of the process.
Yeah.
Like if you watch, not rugby related, but if you watch some professional jugglers, a team of jugglers who are juggling chainsaws between each other, now that is a process. There is no shortage of skill in each stage of that process.
That's exactly the second part, which is, what about the skill in being able to keep to the process?
Exactly.
I think that's a skill.
Yeah. But in rugby terms, say lower levels, I reckon whoever, if you played in a rugby team, whatever level that is, if you're listening, elite down to bottom level, there's probably a good chance you had, off of a line out, you'll have had two or three phases that the whole team knew what they were going to do. And then it's free play, play what you see.
I had a funny experience this weekend. So I played a game this weekend. But Ultram Kurzel too, so massive thank you to Ultram Kurzel for allowing me to play.
Why aren't Tok H playing?
Let's not talk about it. Let's not talk about it.
I want to talk about it. No, go on. Make your point.
we had three backs moves, and they all did the same thing.
Was it
you played 12?
I started at 15.
Knife, fork,
started
spoon.
At 15?
Dummy says a pop.
We had lead shadow. We didn't even run as a lead shadow. I don't know what the hell we were running. And we had...
Is that like a league move where one player runs...
That's what it should be, yeah. that isn't what happened. we had something else which was like... basically, both the centres hit the same gap. I can't remember what we called it. And we had another move which was... the chances of us having to use this move, it was basically off a set piece to a centre. It just wasn't going to happen. And I'm thinking these moves make no sense.
But basic moves would be like, you know, 12,
DSP
line out. Yeah. No, but you
hit me up the middle.
Switch one.
I've played in teams. I've played in teams at high levels where you know off this line out, it's off the top. 12's going to crash it up. One pod of forwards goes the same way. The others hang out and we flash it back left. Well, stuff like that. So that's a process.
Yeah.
But then after that, go for it.
Yeah. Well, it was an awesome game because there's a lot of lads there who I've played against, but were not part of Ultram Kurzel because they needed to get a second team together to play MMU2s. So there's quite a few good lads that I've met or played against in the past. So it was quite nice to be on the same team as them. But anyway, we found out at the end that the reason these moves made no sense is because the fly half was the captain of the second team, who was usually at back row, second row, but because he had the opportunity to pick himself at 10, like, yep, 10. So, and then, to be fair, he's got a tight prop at 15, me, who then moved to centre.
You're a very light tight head prop these days.
Yeah. I need to get into this.
A back row at 13.
Nice.
In fact, maybe two back rows at 12 and 13.
It's the future.
13.
Sam Simmons against South Africa.
Lavani Bottia and
Sam Simmons.
A third back row on the wing. And we might have had an actual winger on the other wing. I'm not sure what position Brad played.
So you've got one back in the back line.
It sounds like it.
Like, not wanting to go too far down the rabbit hole, let's keep it broad if we can. But what's going on at Toc H? Because my son, Louis, on Saturday, Broughton Park were asked to form a joint team with Didsbury because they didn't have the numbers.
Mm.
So they played under 13s for Didsbury. So my lad Louis wore the blue and yellow of Didsbury at the weekend.
Wonderful.
Scored a great try.
Did it suit him?
It looked good, actually.
What position do you think he's going to play? We said we weren't too specific, but we'll talk about one under 13 player.
At the minute, weirdly, which I wouldn't have predicted. At the minute, I think he's got the making of a winger.
Ooh, he's really?
He's quick.
That's it. I was not expecting you to say that.
And his defence is awesome.
So, well, he won't be needing 13 that.
13 potentially, yeah.
Ooh, nice.
Mm. Anyway, but what's going on? Because and to keep this broad.
I know, this is a broad point.
Are there some clubs not playing rugby right now?
Yes, that is right. So, post-lockdown, the RFU or the local unions put certain clubs into certain, almost like friendly leagues. So you have round robins against different teams. So some clubs did that, other clubs just arranged friendlies, but not all of them. And some of the feedback I'm getting from DORs around the league just blows my mind. So two of them told me, and one of them openly admits that maybe I made the wrong decision here. But they just said, yeah, it's a road to injury. Of course it's a road to injury. What do you think happens when you're on a rugby field? This is the game that we signed up to. Player welfare is very important in the pro level. If you get hit in the head or you're overworked because it's your bloody job and you can't get overworked, well then, yeah, of course player welfare gets in the way of things. Player welfare should not be an excuse not to go and play limited rules rugby under any circumstance whatsoever. And, you know, they're not backing this up with any evidence. They're backing it up with things like, oh, I've heard some horror stories of injury.
Where have you been for the last year, by the way?
Yeah, horror stories about injuries. Of course you've heard. I mean, of course. You know, rugby clubs' primary roles are to go out there and facilitate the game of rugby. And to think, I mean, maybe there's a couple of things I think going on here. Number one, the everlasting chat about player welfare in the pro game, which is completely justified, filters down to the lower levels where it is not justified at all, you know, outside of HIAs and that sort, you know, recognise and remove. That is important. But you're there to play rugby. Because if you take this point of view that we'll only play rugby when I feel the player's ready, well, what metrics are you using? If you want to go down this route, it's a very dangerous route to go down. Because if too many people agree with you, then you have to show some evidence as to, well, we'll only play once a player has been to 8 training sessions and has shown that he can tackle competently. Most fourth teams and third teams, and actually a lot of second teams, run purely on the fact that people do not train and they show up on a Saturday with because odd boots.
Yeah, they want a game of rugby.
Yeah, they want a game of rugby.
And if you play, the laws of the game are there to control the aggression that is inherent in rugby. And also, in this case, it'd be one thing if we're talking about people under a certain age.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is adults.
But even under a certain age, what are the records they're keeping to say, yeah, we're now competent to play? Because if this is the mindset that they're not competent to play and they played and they got an injury, presumably the mindset's also, oh, well, we're liable for something or we shouldn't have played that game. And it's the wrong way to think about things. I don't know why they're doing it.
Well, I mean, this might seem like a heavy-handed thing to say, but if you're at a rugby club now that is proactively able to play, but proactively not playing, I don't think that rugby club deserves your custom.
Tollgate just turned into a bloody social club. Like, it's turned into a social club, which is
not necessarily a bad thing.
It's like the way I.
So it's only the people that you would have played that are not playing, or have Tollgate said we can't play.
No. Tollgate have looked for games.
Right. Okay. Fine.
I mean, I wouldn't say we've.
You haven't left every stone unturned.
I would say it's loosely looking for games, and we do have a load of pre-seasons booked. Loads of pre-seasons, and. You know.
I can't believe after this long.
Someone told me the other day, there'll be loads of rugby in the future. I nearly threw my drink across the room. Of course there'll be loads of rugby in the future. We've not played for over 18, well, not 18 months. Well, near enough 18 months, actually. Well, let's play the game.
Yeah, let's say you start playing senior rugby aged 18 and you go through till you're 36. Mm. 1/18th of your, or more than that. One fifteenth, if you're lucky and have no injuries or don't have kids or a job, which means you can't play for a period of time. 1/15th, but it's quite legitimate in a lot of cases, 10%, maybe even 15% of your adult rugby has been taken from you. And to then deny people that,
I think
it's ridiculous.
I think, certainly in the Tockage situation, it's nothing like the Oars,
they've got rid of scrums and lineouts for the time being as well.
Yeah, well, that's not our concern. I think our concern is, I think the best way I can put it is, it's like going to the gym every week or every day, stopping for a couple of months and then trying to get motivated to organise yourself to go get back to the gym. Some of the excuses, like there'll be more rugby in the future. I mean, I just want to shoot myself. The other one was, the lads will get bored of rugby. Why join a rugby club? Why do you think we're here? So there is a few issues there.
They'll get bored of training with no outlet to put that into practice.
What's the point in training? What is the point? Yeah. So the proudest moment I have had, or one of the proudest moments I've had as someone involved in rugby, was December 19th when Stockport and ourselves played, because we were the only two clubs in the Northwest that I know of who actually were bothered to play the game that we love so much on that single window. And the thing is, in the scenario that we find ourselves now, with all the fear-mongering and all the nonsense about COVID, every chance you get to play the game, you need to field a team.
Well, yeah.
You need to try.
I was going to say, I don't want to go down a different path, and I definitely don't want to pour too much negativity on it, but I'm not convinced you're going to be able to play rugby in December this year.
Well,
I wouldn't be surprised if there was a period of time when you don't have it. So while you've got it, enjoy it.
Yeah,
I hope you're wrong. But
get on
the field
whilst you can.
See something like
that. They were trying to motivate. Some clubs are brilliant. Like old Winians are playing every week. Eccles playing every week. I'm sure Altrincham have had at least another game. Broughton Park have decided no games for us. Burnage have decided no games for us. Stockport are playing. Didsbury have not played yet. I don't know what Bedians are doing. But you know, there's. Loads of, and from what I'm hearing, this is up and down the country, there's a slight reluctance to get the lads back together and just get them out on the field, which is exactly what I think the women played, to be fair to Didsbury. Didsbury is definitely a case of loving the social too much. It is definitely
which is always dangerous.
Yeah. Believe you me, we are not.
If you run a team, let the boys play.
Thank you, Tim. Never have truer words been spoken.
Right. Should we go into next week?
What's happening next week?
Premiership. Three rounds to go, and the only real big... Well, I suppose we can be grateful that the top eight get into the Champions Cup from the point of view of we have meaningful rugby in that sense. Mm. But also it's meaningful in, certainly, when Bristol go to Sale, because that is... Sale are trying to get a home semi-final.
Yeah, so this is the most interesting game of the week, I would say.
Yeah, I'm working this one. I'm really looking forward to it.
Are you?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Are you going to come down to...
So I'm meant to be camping with the family, right? Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm back on Monday, so the podcast is going to be a day late. But it's bank holiday, so it's fine.
Bank holiday, yeah.
Absolutely fine. If I can go to Sale, I will go to Sale. And, I don't really care what happens to to everyone else. And then drive to camping later on.
Half 10 at night.
Well,
fancy going to that game.
Yeah,
definitely.
Let's see if we can get Phil in as well. But we were meant to have a... well, we're going camping as well, but I've we're leaving at 10 p.m. or straight after the game. We're 11, driving. I've got to go and get the motorhome from my dad.
Where are you going?
I've got a game at Exeter
on the Sunday.
So I'm going to get the motorhome on the Saturday from my dad in Kent, and then I'm driving that down to Devon.
Wow!
So that I can work. I'll
tell you what, your carbon footprint, Tim, over the past few years.
Jeez.
I hope you're planting a lot of trees.
Nature's
not healing around you, is it?
So the deal I've always had with my Mrs. Kate is, she said, every time you get offered a game or anything to do with rugby, say yes and we'll work it out. Mm. So she's lived to regret that, I think, to be honest.
So where are you going camping? That's what I want to know.
She's got her sister in Exmouth, so we're going to go down in Devon. Then we're going to go along the Jurassic Coast.
Ooh.
Nice.
Weymouth Way. And then we've got some friends we're meeting in the Cotswolds for a few days as well. But so I've got a week or 6 days or whatever in a motorhome, and three rugby games in amongst it. Sale.
Oh, awesome.
Nice. Because I've got London Irish on the following Saturday as well. So I get to go to that Brentford one.
Awesome.
It's perfect. So I get a week, but I still get rugby matches.
So I've got...
And you still get paid.
Oh, yeah. There's that too, yeah.
I've got Friday, Saturday, Sunday in a campsite in Abersoch.
With two kids,
yeah. And I'm with my mum and my brothers and my sister. My mum has organised this thing. And she sent me pictures today of the barbecue that she's intending to use. She goes, like, what do you think? And it's like 1 foot by 2 foot. I was like, for 14 people? Are you insane?
14. 14 adults or 14 people?
10 adults, children?
10 adults, though.
That's not 14 people. Unless you're counting the children.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, there was 16 people.
16.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. It's too small.
That's
cooking for lots of people is basically a logistics task. Right, it's
yeah.
You know, there's no flair involved. It's logistics.
One little thing I will say on barbecues. Okay, there is an element where barbecues you massively over cater.
Oh, this is my pet hate. No one would ever go to their kitchen, turn on the oven,
exactly,
and cook 20 sausages and 18 burgers for four mates, would they? But for barbecues, it's fine.
Yeah, it's like, oh, everyone needs a steak and a lamb chop and a sausage a burger.
Yeah, yeah. Four sausages, two burgers, and all the other stuff.
It is my pet hate. I count my guests and I count what we're having, and then we say, no, all you're having is X. I really despise. And do you know what I hate even more? People that bring their own meat to my barbecue. As if I need some bird's eye bloody burgers to throw on my Argentine barbecue.
If I'm going for a barbecue at JB's, I purposefully go to Iceland. Buy some 99p
and then take his Frost
Butcher's burgers.
And then have one of his Frost Butcher's freshly made ones.
Yeah. You're right there, Tim. I actually like barbecuing veg. That is my favourite thing.
Barbecued veg is awesome.
Isn't it?
There's no problem with having a load of meat, over catering the amount of meat. It's the fact that it all gets cooked at the same time and then it all gets put in one big dish.
A big congealed lump of meat.
Should be sort of, well, particularly if you're having a steak, give it a couple of minutes on each side, then off you go.
When I was in South Africa, the way that I like them doing it there is they just put a bit of meat on the barbecue, cut it up, and they walk around. And they carry on walking around with this, you know, steak which is cut up, and they just cook over and over and over again. That's how you do a barbecue.
That's it.
The South African braai.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Rather than, like you say, just a mountain of meat to put in some white buns. Oh, it makes me hungry.
I remember in the very, very early days of the podcast when BT Sport invited us down to a rugby tonight to chat backstage, we met Jacques Berger.
Yes, we did, didn't we?
And he told us about his...
wearing a light blue Super Dry shirt.
It's such a beautiful memory.
How could I forget?
Yeah.
Such a vivid memory. It was really... do you remember how exciting and new and amazing that felt?
Oh, my God, yeah.
That was mind-blowing.
And to find out that Jacques Berger was there blew my mind.
Yeah.
We drove down and back all in one day,
we did. So we did
in
two...
Phil's Mini.
Yes. My old Mini. They only got rid of this year.
Well, I guess it was new to BT Sport as well, because they were like, oh, how can we make this as exciting as possible? Well, we'll incorporate fans. And after two seasons of fans, they're like, forget these guys. They've got to go. We can't have any more bloggers. Off they go.
Think how different it could be. If any other podcast had started when we started, it would have been them.
Yep.
It would have been them going down, and that would have opened a door for them, and there you go, sliding doors. But no, I remember Jacques Berger talking about the braai, and it was, he just said, you have to cook it cook it like this, and they put a bit of cheese and a bit of kind of tomato chutney kind of thing that they cut up. And
that's exactly right. That's exactly. So one of my biggest worries about this weekend, right, is there's no electricity. So how do I make cocktails without ice? Right, this has been plaguing me. And do you know what? It's one of those things. And there's a rugby lesson here as well. When you look at a problem from a certain direction, you can't get over it. You need to look at the problem from a different direction. So I can't chill my liquids. So what am I going to do? Hot cocktails. That's the only thing that I can think of, is I'm going to have to go for something hot.
With the weather as it has been this weekend, you need a hot cocktail. It's been ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like espresso martinis with actual hot espresso.
Yeah. Because I can't even chill beer. So it's got to be red wine and some sort of hot kind of...
See, I would have attacked it from another angle. Have you ever read about the ice industry from North America?
Yes, I have, and it is fascinating.
18th, 19th century.
Yeah, it's amazing, Tim. You'll love this.
It's unbelievable. So they used to. So North America, the Great Lakes would obviously freeze in midwinter, and they would cut out blocks of ice, huge blocks of ice that they would need teams of horses to drag out of the ice, and they would package them up with...
I mean, this is an engineering feat in itself.
It's amazing.
So they would package them up with sawdust around them, a thick layer of a foot or 2 foot of sawdust, put that in a wooden box, put it on a boat, put lots of these on boats and send them all around the world, so that if you were, say, I don't know, in the British Navy and you were enjoying a nice...
G&T?
Chilled drink, G&T...
On the foredeck?
In India, you would have ice in your drink that was carved out of a North American lake.
Yeah,
transported around the world.
You'd get plates of ice in the windows of department stores. Mm. And that's why Americans are so obsessed with cold drinks. And that's why they always talk about warm beer in the UK, because that's their thing. They were mining ice and then bringing it down south.
Do you know, the British Empire gets... a bad rap.
It's not a British. It's American. It's not British. It's American.
That was.
Yeah.
They were selling it.
Oh,
all
right.
The
British Navy would buy the blocks of ice to travel around the world.
Ships. You've got to fight. You've got to have gin tonics on your warship somewhere. Inhumane.
That reminds me. Have you watched The Terror yet? I think you'd love it.
No, I haven't.
It's kind of it's a naval.
I mean,
British naval story with a little bit of Game of Thrones thrown in for good measure.
Ooh,
just a little bit.
What's on?
I think it's on iPlayer.
Perfect.
But so there were two British naval ships. I think I've mentioned this on the pod before. It's two British naval ships that did the tried to find the way through the Arctic. There's one little bit they thought you could get through at a certain time of year,
and they tried to do
that expedition. And the two ships set off, and they got not giving too much away. They got stuck, and then the guys on board. It was imagining the story of what happened to the guys that were on board.
If you hadn't wasted so much time already talking about things which aren't rugby, I'd now tell you about the Russian nuclear-powered icebreaker. But I won't do that now. I'll save that for another day.
Another time.
Yeah.
Japanese Wagyu steak on a barbecue, apparently. Is
I can't see why it wouldn't be amazing.
Yeah.
So JB and we had Kobe, which is like... Ooh. It's like, instead of having sparkling white wine, having champagne. Mm. It is... the top level of Wagyu, and it was like someone had infused pate with butter.
Mm.
It wasn't like meat.
Wow.
It wasn't like just a steak, a slab of meat.
How much chewing did it require?
Just chewing?
None.
Chewing?
None.
Did it break down?
It just melts.
I'm pretty sure you get your money back if you chew.
It was...
Wow.
It was unbelievable.
We had prawns which were basically still alive. They were still alive. When they cooked them, they jumped off the barbecue.
As they got put on the hot plate, they were alive as they got put.
They cover them up, I think partly for steaming, but partly to make sure they don't jump anywhere. Savages.
It's awesome.
Yep.
That meal was quality.
Anyway, if we've got some more rugby, we should do some rugby now.
I'll just say one thing. I'm just really ploughing through the Dan Carlin hardcore history, the one about Japan.
Supernova of the East,
and it's just at the point with
eat prawns and wagyu beef bit.
The
wait for the Strong Zero one.
Yeah, it's amazing. Strong Zero.
Right, next weekend.
Yes, so we've got Friday Night Lights, We've just mentioned it, Sale versus Bristol.
That's what took us off on that random tangent, camping, barbecues.
Yeah.
So, who's going to win?
Well done, Phil.
So, frankly, I think Sale are going to give them an almighty beating.
Wow.
I really do. I think Sale are going to come out firing. They've got a point to prove. Bristol playing a lot of rugby. They're very confident. They strike me to be one of those teams that is there ready for the taking. Do you know when you're playing really well and you can't imagine losing? That is when you lose. And I think that Bristol are there, and I think Sale wants to take them down a peg or two.
Are you saying Bristol may have peaked and might not get back to that level again, and Sale are still have peaking to do?
No, I actually think that this will do Bristol good. I think a loss to Sale will do Bristol good, to refocus their mind that, you know, hard rugby does still exist. And I think Sale will give them an absolute hiding. So give me Sale by 10 points.
Mm. I fancy Sale because they're at home to nudge this one.
I fancy Bristol.
What? How?
Top of the league.
I'll tell you what.
Handy team.
Someone called Pat will do the interview afterwards as the winning coach.
Yeah, there you go.
Pat.
Yeah, well, one of them.
Not Alex.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're thinking Pat Sanderson?
I was thinking Pat Sanderson for a minute. I was thinking they're both called Pat for a second.
Yeah. Yeah, to be fair, I agreed with that, because it took me a while to realise it wasn't Pat Sanderson.
Yeah,
sorry,
I thought I was being clever then, but clearly not.
Yeah, give me Bristol. I think they'll have too much for Sale.
Okay. How? Where? Where? Where do you think it's win?
Everywhere. Everywhere. They will Sir be able to hold them up front, and Sir Semi. Charles and Randrandra.
Got to say, actually, if you think about the...
And Malins.
Not, it's not a match-up. You'd rather, if you were Sale, you're going Hammersley versus... Pietau.
Well, you've got James
versus
James Hammersley and, say, Morland going on one side, and then Byron on the other. Byron's a superb defender. And the others, okay, you know, they're competent professionals. And that's not a dig. They are competent professionals. That's maybe not enough to deal with Radranda and Pietau and whoever
the other. Malin's looking nice on the wing.
But here's the other thing, right? Do they get over the gain line enough to play that style of rugby? And that's where it's going to fall down. It's not going to be won on the outsides. It's going to be won on the insides.
I'm not too worried about that. Bristol by five.
How do you think Nathan Hughes holds up against the Dupreez? I don't think he does well when he's matched physically. I think he's very good when he's on the front foot and he's beating people up. I don't think they go forward at all, actually, the more I think about it.
I think they've got enough. We'll see.
We will see.
We'll find out.
The one thing that will definitely happen is we will see.
Hopefully, we'll all be there to watch it as well.
Yeah, I hope so.
That would be awesome.
Great. And Saturday.
And, well, there's another Friday night game.
Oh, right. Cool.
Gloucester, London Irish, which is a... well, it's not a bottom of the table clash. London Irish still battling to get top eight. Whether they want top eight is another matter, but Gloucester are...
They will. I think it's worth... might be rugby inside line... did some digging and it's worth about $250,000.
Okay.
So, one and a half wingers?
Like about a third of 1 year of Adam Coleman.
Yeah, perfect.
Not even a third of 1 year of Adam Coleman.
I think London Irish, because we're getting to the point now where we can sort of tell about the season in general rather than just, you know, the last few weeks. I think they've done everything really well this season. I think for, you know, a team coming from where they have done, even though I mocked them at the start, and I think we all did, for the amount of money they've spent on people, you understand what the strategy is now. And I think they'll be able to attract...
When relegation was a thing, you totally understand the strategy, and it would have been vindicated.
But do you know what? Looking at Worcester need to do what London Irish did, which is just buy older, experienced players. I didn't think this at the start of the season, but I do think it now.
As long as you can then weave in some of the talented youngsters.
Yeah.
Well, which London Irish have done.
And I will say on Worcester, it is... Nick David going to Quinns has all of the hallmarks of, and by all accounts, Worcester let him go.
Yeah, because they couldn't guarantee him game time because of Nana.
Okay. This looks to me very much like we're Leicester Tigers, we don't need Harry Thacker because we've got Tatafu Palotta now.
It's not a good look. I mean, I hated that. I absolutely hated it. And I bet Quinn's getting for a good deal too, because you look at Quinn's, you go, actually, I can win stuff at Quinn's. I can go there, I can make a name for myself, I can get some game time, I can get the...
And push for international. Yeah.
That's what these players want. So now that London Irish have established themselves as a proper top half of the table team, which is where I think they'll probably end up, they can then go and attract players like Nick David when, you know... I mean, I don't think London Irish could attract players like Nick David if they came third from bottom. But I think top half, people think, yeah, okay, I can see myself there, I can see a future there.
And they can retain guys like Ben Loder and Ollie Hassel-Collins and Ben Donald.
But
and
to get there...
Loosehead prop, who I really like, I can't remember his name.
Hoskins?
No, is it Goodridge Clark?
Goodridge
Clark, yeah.
Yeah.
He is, I don't know if he's a tight prop, but he is
no,
a prop.
No, Loosehead prop. Loosehead prop,
oh, right,
sorry.
There you go. Yeah, so to get there, Worcester need to spend like London Irish, which is not a monumentally attractive proposition if you're their owner.
Yeah, and it's not what they've been doing for the last few years as well. They've been having a few key guys, Huhard and Bentio and Milani Nanai and Duhan Vandermeer there.
I'm not sure I'd spend my money there.
No.
That's not where I'd spend my money.
Neither would I. Anyway, did you see the London Irish news this week about Theo Brophy-Clues
retiring, yeah.
What? How?
On medical grounds.
When?
Repeat concussions.
Oh, how awful.
Which is horrendous because he's...
He's young.
He's a young, talented man.
That is awful.
Horrendous news. Anyway, Gloucester, London Irish. Gloucester at home. Anyone want to make any predictions?
Not really.
can Gloucester get top eight still?
They mathematically can. It looks unlikely.
Hey, not to disrespect the Premiership or anything, can I get excited about Benetton representing... the Pro 14 against the South African team yet?
There's nothing this week, so they're still top. For another week, they're
so
still top.
If they win the next one, will they be the winners of this thing?
The Mushroom Cup?
Yeah.
I can't remember what...
And then they get to play the Sharks or someone.
Let me have a look. Oh, I did look it up previously.
While you're looking that up, I've just got to mention the Major League Rugby getting excited. My boys Nola Gold got a win against the Utah Warriors this weekend, which puts them top of their conference. What's the team that... what's the team in LA?
Gilgronis. Yep.
The Gilgronis are top of the other conference and are top overall. But it looks awesome. And one thing you'll love, JB, there are videos posted every week by Major League Rugby, biggest hits of the week.
There we go. It's easy, isn't it, when you know how?
Biggest hits of the week. It has heavy rock music interspersed with massive tackles. And in between some of the massive tackles, they have the odd little scuffle and fight.
Really?
They have, and at the end, they had little bit pictures of players downing a beer out of a Man of the Match cup.
Yes.
So it's exactly what you're...
To be honest, I'm not interested in that. I'm looking forward to their mental health campaign.
Well, they're doing that as well this week, actually, as Major League Rugby. So mental fitness they're doing as well. So you can cover all
No to Hate. They're doing a No to Hate weekend, yeah? That's the only way that I'd watch.
Not that I'm aware of, but one thing to watch out for is June the 5th. I think this weekend, New York played the New England Free Jacks, which is a tasty little rivalry.
So New York have the worst kit I've ever seen, although I appreciate it because of its uniqueness and it's...
Is that the baseball?
Yeah, it's horrendous.
Pinstripe
isn't it?
One. It's like the Yankees, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate it. It's horrendous, but I appreciate it in the same way that I appreciate the Ospreys kits now. Because it's part of Ospreys' heritage to have a disgusting kit. But the kits in the MLR are absolutely awesome. Across the board, the Gilgronis, awesome. Giltinis, awesome.
The Austin Gilgronis kit, I really like.
The Toronto Arrows, awesome.
Yeah.
The Free Jacks, awesome.
Yeah.
Like, all the kits are pretty good.
Nola Gold's quartered kit, awesome, my boys.
I tell you what, it might just be an American thing. I tell you the stash I really like. It's not even rugby. I like Into Miami stash and their badge. Have you seen them?
Oh, yes, I have.
So cool.
I have seen that.
No, I've not seen it.
It's like it's got little flamingos. It's all pink.
David Beckham's MLS franchise.
Yeah.
One game to watch out for, which I would, if we go to an MLR game next...
When we go to an MLR
When we go to an MLR game next year, what about the Texas Cup match between Houston and Austin?
Can't see any downsides to it.
Yeah. That would be awesome. That's happening on June the 5th. Yeah, all the games are free to stream on the Rugby Network app.
Mushroom Cup.
Yep.
So Benetton, top, the only unbeaten team in the whole competition, North and South. There's three more rounds left, of which Benetton have a bye in one of them.
Okay, so that's good.
They've only got two more rounds. The two teams they have to play are... They host Connacht.
Winnable.
And they travel away in the last game... to Ospreys. That's actually two. It's not impossible.
But if they win one, that should be enough, shouldn't it?
Well, no, because it's the top team in each conference. Then, according to this, play off against each other. So the top,
the Mushroom Cup final,
play off against the top Northern Hemisphere team. So they really need to win both of them, both of those games,
and then they might get a South African team.
I'm not convinced that will happen. That game.
It was rumored not to be happening.
I think it could happen.
I'm looking at does say it will happen, but I'm not certain.
They've shut down rugby below pro level in South Africa, I believe, this week.
Mind boggles. All right.
Anyway.
So next Premiership game?
So Saturday, we've got a 2 o'clock kickoff, which is Harlequins against Bath, which is going to be a home win.
Home win.
Yep.
We then got Worcester hosting Leicester, which Leicester will get some of the badness out of their system.
Mm-hmm. I say home win, but Quins have got less on the line now. Well, no, because they'll want to push. Because they're now not looking below them, but might they be looking above them?
They can't get second.
Get third. They can still get third. They can still technically get second.
They could mathematically get second.
Okay, so they'll
they're not going to get second.
Home win.
They're only 3 points behind Sale.
I think if I'm home win. Harlequins, not to be a horrible cynic, I don't want any more injuries. I mean, my whole team is predicated on the fact that you can have consistent selection. You know, I do not want another important guy going down. I'm not even sure. Maybe I would start Marcus Smith, but if we win, he comes off.
As it's a home game, maybe they go for this, get the win. Then they could go, we've got a three-week process now to build to
semi-final. They do still need one more win.
Yeah.
If they don't get one more win, Northampton still can get top four.
Home win.
So Will Evans is not coming back. I think Esther Hazen can come back for the final.
Yeah, Esther Hazen can play again.
Semi-final.
Yeah.
So if he's back, that's massive.
In fact, he might even be back for the last league game.
Esther Hazen, will be back.
That's enormous. That is absolutely enormous.
Yeah.
So the last thing you want is Esther Hazen back and Don Brandt out or something like that.
Or Marcus Smith out.
God, no. Don't say that.
Okay. So are you going for a home win or are you going for a Bath win?
Oh, I'm going for Harlequins win.
No, okay. He's going for Bath to be 12-0 up after 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I think Bath go up.
And then you lump on Quins.
Yeah. £8 on to Quins.
Worcester hosting Leicester. Which Leicester, there's no point in them resting anyone. They might as well just play their strongest team.
Yep.
They will get a top 8, but they need to get top 8 now.
Yeah, they do need to get top 8. They're not actually good because they're only 2 points ahead of Bath in ninth.
Yeah, so they'll be going for it.
They need to win.
I think I'd like to finish ahead of Bath as well.
Yes.
Quite a driver anyway.
So, yeah. So yeah, Leicester to win that.
Away win.
And then Northampton host Wasps.
That'll be a good game.
It should be. Both teams need a win. Both teams need to improve their season. Give me Wasps.
I'm thinking away win, but no, I'm going to go home win.
Give me Wasps.
Give me Saints.
If you were Dan Bigger now, you know, we're probably not going to... I mean, no, they've got to go for it on this one, haven't they? This is Dan Bigger thinking, last game.
No, this is my last game.
If Bigger even
This
plays.
Is Dan Bigger's... Right, Dan Bigger, what he needs to do now is he needs to make sure he's getting value for the 10% of his salary that he gives away to his agent. Right, his agent needs to step in and say, Dan, you're not playing. No matter how much you want to play, you're not playing. Because Dan Bigger will want to play. It's his mindset. It's his character. He wants to get out there and play. You can't play. Yeah. No way. No way. So, no.
I'm normally with players playing whenever they're fit and available. He should not play.
If I was his agent, I would tranquilise him.
He went off with a concussion.
Concussion two weeks ago.
Yeah.
He's had concussions in the past.
Yeah, you're right.
He should not be going anywhere near
the
field right now.
Chill, Dan. You're a hero. You're a legend.
Focus on some South African game tape.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, Tim, you'll be there. Exeter Chiefs hosting Newcastle Falcons, which is nothing but a home win.
Yeah, that was.
I want to see Dave Ewers and Carl Ferns start six. Go head to head.
I think Ferns will come off the bench, and I think he'll come off about 10 minutes into the second half. Because it looks like, that's how it looks to me, is if they're giving him 10 minutes,
Yeah, well, Newcastle aren't going to change a team that's won two in a row and has put them in with a shout of getting top 8.
Because I'm actually watching Newcastle Falcons quite closely now, for obvious reasons. Callum Chick's a good player.
He's a really good player.
Bloody hell.
He's one of my guys that I would get into the Saxons.
Like, how old is he?
25, something like that. 25, 26.
He carries a ball bloody well.
I don't think he's old.
He must be English, I assume.
Yeah, 25.
I wonder if he'll be like the next Mark Wilson, which completely ignored until he's not, and then makes an impact.
Yeah.
he's talented, number eight.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, definitely.
All done, aren't we?
Done. Right.
That's jobs it. Are good, isn't it?
There we go. Thank you very much for watching on YouTube. Before you go, just hit that like button and hit the little red subscribe button. That'd be cool as well. And just to make sure that it was every bit as good as you're thinking that was right now, make sure you go and hit subscribe on your podcast feed so you can listen to the podcast form of it tomorrow. If you're listening on a podcast right now, hit subscribe, get onto our YouTube channel, go to patreon.com/eggchasers. He's at Jay Beermore on Twitter. We're at Rugby Podcast. This week, I'm not going to tweet. I said that last week and I did, but now I'm really not going to. I'm going to be lurking.
On Twitter, I've had enough. I've had enough. Not because of something else anyone else has done. It's dawned on me. It is the worst format for me. I tweeted today and I don't notice that that my spell checker is putting in a different words, the word that I think. And then it's like, this is clearly the worst form of communication for a dyslexic ever. So that's it. I think I'm done. If I want to communicate, I'll tell you on YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube's perfect for you because not only can you say it rather than write it.
Yeah.
You can explain your points.
Yeah, rather than no.
Rather than be condensed down into... Yeah.
Long. So, yeah. Although, I won't stitch that. Right.
just on Calum Chick, he played in the... winning 2016 England Under-20s that won the World Cup.
He did!
Alongside a few good names, alongside Marchand, Max Mallinds was in there,
Harry Mallinder was 10.
Who else was in there? George Knott, Will Evans.
There was that winger, the rapid winger, I think he's... Aspinall Robinson. That one.
Thorley was on the bench, Harry Randall was on the bench. One of the Kitchener boys, good family, was on the bench.
Great
was
family.
Jack, I assume it's was Will Jack, Stewart.
Was the Bath hooker the hooker?
Done?
No. Singleton was playing.
Oh, was it Singleton? Jack Walker? Yeah.
Jack Walker did play under-20s, though, definitely.
Mm. Okay.
West as loose head prop, Will Stewart as tight head prop.
Nice.
Hell of a team. And one of the Willis boys, presumably.
What do you think of this? Do you think this does show that... If you play for Newcastle and you're a talented player, that you won't get pit for England?
No.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.